Why am I bothering the prepper group with Sister Anne's personal calling to start a religious order? Is that a prepper topic, or is it just coincidence that many of our prepper members wish me well and are interested in my journey? The rule of the Mother of God was dictated during an approved apparition of the Blessed Virgin Mary to two shepherd children in 1846 in the French Alps. She said it would be for a congregation in the latter times, when the faith would be under attack. Pope Leo XIII thought that the latter times were there in his day, and he approved the rule. Other groups of people on through two world wars also thought the time was now. But the order somehow was never definitively established. The prepper group is all about preparing for an end of an era event. Our economy is in trouble. Our geography is in trouble, considering all the potential for earthquakes and other natural disasters. The power grid is old and vulnerable. We have an influx of Muslim immigrants with an agenda. And our Constitution of the great United States is in trouble if the wrong group of people get elected. But in a way, these things are not the main concern of our prepper group. For our prepper group, our membership is Christian. We are gravely concerned that the moral compass of our world is not aligned with the natural law of the Creator. We foresee a major clash with the law of God and the law of man. And if men choose to oppose God on a global scale, they're going to need a leader. And who else will be happy to step in? Except Satan. He'll be happy to do the job. The Bible is geared for a big confrontation between those who love God and those who don't. The serpent will be defeated, the remnant will be rescued, and the meek will inherit the earth and rule for 1,000 years. Not everybody's called to live through a biblical event. We are. The order of the Mother of God is all about the woman of Genesis and Apocalypse who defeats the serpent dragon. The book of Hebrews says that when Christians turn their back on Christ, they must expect worse punishment than the Jews in Moses' day. When those who were redeemed, quote, at the Red Sea, but later rejected the Ten Commandments. Saint Mother Teresa of Calcutta was a teaching sister for over 20 years when she said she heard a call within a call. She had one vocation to be a teaching sister, then she had another vocation to use that experience to start a new congregation. I was a cloistered nun for 33 years when I heard my call within a call to get this order launched. It's Mary's personal order. It's her rule. The members will be her shock troops to be little Davids against the Goliaths of our day. It's all a bit mysterious how it's going to play out. But my biggest hurdle was the rule itself. It was dictated in French. It's never been officially translated into any other language. It was published in French at various times by small groups, but these copies are long out of print and very hard to find. The only texts I had to work with were from an anonymous internet site, and the English text had a lot of obscure phrases. Who could I consult to gain clarity? A French priest by the name of Father Michel Courtville published a doctoral thesis on the apparition and rule of La Salette in 3 thick volumes. He went into the Vatican archives when Pope John Paul made them public archives around 1999, and he looked and looked and looked until he found those documents of the rule, which many people said, you know, it's just a myth or, you know, it's just an idea, but he found the documents and he published them. I bought those books on Amazon. They were all in French. Jessica and I searched and searched for him on the internet. I wanted to ask him if any English translation was underway. I couldn't find him. She couldn't find him, and she had all sorts of university software to be looking for those kind of things, and doctoral thesis should be on internet sources, but we couldn't find him. So I started to turn to my friends. I've had very few friends, one in French Canada and a couple in Kansas who knew some French, and thought they had some time to translate at least portions of these books for me. But they all had full-time jobs, and months went by. And they were so apologetic, but they only translated pages here and there, just bits, and they all felt, I'm not sure I'm worthy to be a translator. I don't think I'm cut out for it. You know, this is a serious thing, and you need someone professional. I said, yeah, who can I get professional in Kansas? And if you want to pay someone over the internet, it's very expensive, by the word, almost. And then it's, you know, people who are in a secular profession, they don't really understand phrases that are like religious, from a religious constitution and rule. It's a total different vocabulary. So it's not easy to find the right kind of people to translate. And so I was getting a bit, wondered why Mary called me. I wasn't doing too good a job at getting this started. And then almost by accident, when I was looking, I'm always looking at La Salette websites to see what's there, I found a Canadian La Salette prayer group. And Father Courtville was listed at the very bottom as chaplain, and there was his email address. This priest is regarded as the world expert on La Salette and the rule of the Mother of God. I hastened to email him. This was last April. And he responded from France within 2 hours, totally excited. He said people were gathering around him because he published these theses, and they wanted to begin the rule. People were from Poland, Italy, Africa, France, Mexico, Canada, and everyone was praying desperately, he said, for a religious with experience to assist them in getting this started. He wanted me to come immediately, as soon as possible, now, tomorrow, today. Fortunately, I had an appointment with Bishop Kemi scheduled for June, so I wasn't going to miss that. Okay, I Skyped with Father Courtville a couple times, and there were other people around the dinner table, and I got to meet a few people. And I also had several phone calls with him, and trying to get more clarity on what was happening. And it was never really clear. He could speak English well, but it seemed like there were just so many things happening and people coming and going, and so I decided, you know, I'm just going to wait till I get there to figure this out because it's too complicated to do it in pieces. And he didn't have time, apparently, to sit down and type me a whole thing of what was really happening. So I didn't press him. And that was fortunate. Otherwise, I wouldn't have gone. Okay, so he said, I must come as soon as possible. So he really kept pressing me. And this time, he said, everyone was ready to begin. And there were two bishops in France who showed an openness to allow us to start the order in either of their two dioceses. And my ignorance of French would not be a problem because the two bishops spoke English and were eager to meet me. Everyone there would help me to learn French quickly. It would be easy to learn French, right? Okay, a meeting with one bishop was scheduled for June 24th. And I was urged to arrive in time for that meeting. I got there June 22nd. And after flying into Paris, it was 3 subways and a bus and a van. I finally ended up in northwest France at little town of Beaupro. And I had presumed that France was a first world country. But the house at Beaupro was shabby and filthy. I expressed really surprise at how dirty everything was. And Father Courtville said that this was his family home. But he had been away as chaplain to different religious orders. And so his family didn't want to give it up. And his older brother was sick. And his other sister was somewhere else. And so they decided just to rent the property. And unfortunately, the renters made it very dirty. And so I spent a lot of time the first couple of weeks just scrubbing. It was just, I didn't want to live in a house that filthy. I mean, the ceilings were black. I mean, the bathroom, we won't talk about it. The kitchen, it was awful. You only got the nice pictures after it was cleaned, and I just carefully did certain shots from certain angles. You wouldn't quite get the whole picture. Because I was always trying to figure out, what is the picture anyway? And now my notes disintegrate into pieces, and now I have to ab lib from pieces, and I will try to do that with the help of God. All right. There were a lot of people in the house, and they just kept coming and going. We had Mass at a different time every day there in the little chapel in the living room. Father Courtville apparently didn't have faculties. I mean, he wasn't in contact too much with his regular bishop because he had been a chaplain in other places, and we would all be going to another diocese, to another bishop, so it was just convenient to have Mass at the house, right? So, and we had Mass whenever certain people just showed up They just said, can we have Mass now? Okay, sure, Father says so. So it was impossible to get regularity. And I kept asking, can we have some kind of regularity? Because they were devoted to the divine office. So we had Vespers and Lauds and morning prayer. I mean, all the parts of the divine office in French. But it was kind of like when it was convenient and when we were called and he rings the bell when we wanted to do it. And I never knew what was going to happen from one minute to the next. It was all kind of a very much influx situation. But they told me everything would change when we got to St. Aignan. This is a little town, not that big, not that small. It was 3 hours from Beaupro. It was in a different diocese. And there would be a diocesan priest who would begin an assignment in September there. And that priest was very Marian and some kind of friend of Father Courtville. And he was enthusiastic about somehow helping us get this order started. And the men would live in the rectory with Father Jean-Claude was his name. I never knew his last name. And the women, we would rent out something else and we would live separately. So in Beaupro, it was kind of like a hotel, there were a lot of rooms. It was just kind of crazy. I didn't really like it, but they kept saying it's going to change quickly, soon. Okay, so, but this Father Jean-Claude, he was out of the picture for all of July because he went to southern France to do a 30-day Ignatian retreat. He was very devout and very serious about preparing for this. And so he had no email, no nothing, so he was just out of the picture all of July. And so I got there on June 22nd, and June 24th was supposed to be the mission, big meeting with the bishop. But I was told that the bishop was busy and we had to reschedule. We never had the meeting with that bishop. It was just every day, like, because we were kind of in limbo until we got to St. Aignan, it was like meet people, get acquainted, just clean up the house, and go places. Father Courtville was very excited about all the shrines in the area in western France. And this really is something that will always be with me, because I knew about the French Revolution, that there were 16 Carmelite martyrs of Compiègne who were guillotined as a community. So of course it's a big deal for the Carmelites. We knew all about the French Revolution and how it was begun by Masons and perpetrated as a way to get rid of the faith. And it was very much anti-Catholic. They slaughtered many, many priests during that revolution in 1792 to 94. But there was resistance. It was Catholics killing Catholics, basically. Catholics who decided that they needed a new world order, basically. That was the Masonic term. And we don't need to be run by kings and priests and bishops. And there were abuses. There was too much nobility and too much money. And it was unfair. But it was also staged in many ways, if you study the revolution. But I won't get into that because I'm no expert on it. But what we don't really always get from that picture, and I never really got, I knew that there were lay people who had been martyred, who had stood up for their faith, but I didn't realize that in Western France, it was a bunch of rednecks. They were just rednecks. They were hardworking farmers who were devoted to their faith, their country, and they weren't going to be run around. They weren't going to go along with this new revolution thing. They didn't like it, and so they protested. And so they even tried to gather an army and try to march on certain cities to oppose these revolutionaries who were killing the king and killing all sorts of royalty, thousands of people. And so they didn't even have the weapons. They had nothing. They just picked up their shovels and their scythes and whatever instruments, farm instruments, can be very serious. And they just started marching together and doing what they could at times. And it was kind of ad hoc where it was. And you know, they didn't have the modern means of communication that we have today. So it wasn't as organized as it would be, you know, if we could do it today, I suppose. But it was, but in many places, that's where the word genocide began, I'm told. I don't know the etymology of how it happened, but the revolutionaries decided they needed to get rid of the whole Vendée, the whole Western France. And so they made it a priority to just go in there with their troops. And when they found out that there was a group in a barn having mass or a group assembling here or there, they would just sneak in and just bitterly massacre them. And so all over Western France, you'd just be driving somewhere, there'd be like a calvary, they call it calvaire. It would be like a cross and maybe a couple statues, and that commemorated a massacre of 20, 60, 200, 300 people. It just, there were like these all over the place. And and Father Courtville grew up in this part of, and he was enthusiastic about this. And it wasn't just to see the shrines, but also he wanted to introduce me to different people that he knew. And then I was supposed to tell my story, and line by line I would tell how I felt called to have this experience in Carmel, and I felt called to start the Order of the Mother of God. And it's a 20-minute story. You've heard the story. And so line by line, then they would translate in French, and then everybody would listen to it. And then they would all discuss it in French for the next 2 hours. And so I sat there and looked at different articles and didn't know what was going on most of the time. Most of the time, I didn't know what I was eating either. They just put stuff before me and said, this is blah, 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 blah. Okay. It was all good. It was all good. But it was an experience to be so really out of your, not really know what's going on. That was a very difficult thing. And so that was happening around me. There were people around me that were coming and going through the house. Some stayed a few days and some didn't and some left. And I just assumed that all these people, that's what I was given to assume, that these people were somehow interested in the Order of Mother of God, and they all were excited about me and hugged me and said all kinds of things in French to me. And oh yes, they're very supportive of you and we want this to happen. But the main person, the only person, I didn't find all these sisters and all these people who were supposed to wait. He told me there were two communities, one in Mexico and one in Haiti, who were coming to France to be a part of this congregation, and they would be here, and there would be other people. They weren't there. There was just this one black African girl who didn't know a word of English and didn't even speak French that well. She just knew her African dialect. And Father told me that she was very interested and she wanted to start a novitiate immediately. Great, how do we do that? So he said he will be the translator. So we started to have, I said, okay, first of all, I want to know, what book she's read about the rule. Oh, she hasn't read anything about the rule. She doesn't know anything about it. I thought you said that she had a strong vocation, was excited to join the order. Oh, she's very holy, and I'm sure she'll make the best nun in the world. She just needs to be formed, right? And so so it went. It was very interesting. Piece by piece, it became clear that she was pretending to be very interested in the order, but she really wasn't. So nothing was really starting. I mean, everything was like promises and nothing was coming to pass. And I was there 3 weeks and I was, we got a car. I cleaned the car. I cleaned the house. I was trying to, I was asking if there were any documents to scan in. So I scanned in a few that he had. And I tried to ask him questions about his thesis, but he was always busy. He was on the phone, on the computer, he was here and there. He would never hold still for anything. There was no order. There was just chaos in that house all the time. And after a while, I thought, I don't want to start an order with this guy. He's not really, I don't think he's got it. And anyway, he was always talking about the revelations of God the Father to various people, not just one. There is one that's really legitimate to Mother Marie Eugene. Those are in English and they're pretty well known. I've seen them in adoration chapels around here. They're very beautiful. But there are other revelations of God the Father he was very interested in, but these were, I didn't know if they were approved or not. I didn't think they were, and anyway, he kept saying, we've got, the Order of La Salette, that's for the end times, that's for the end of the world, and that's really not now. For the Order of La Salette, what you got to do, as the Mother Superior of the Order of the Mother of God, you have to promote the revelations to God the Father. I'm thinking, what? This is crazy. So I said, okay, can I see them in English? And that never happened. And I tried to go along with him for a while because I wanted to get the thesis from him and get guidance from him. And the thesis, what I wanted was all the original book in digital form, because if I had that, I could Google translate portions of it once it was digital, and then I would know the gist of pieces, and then I know what would be worth really translating, because all that thesis, you know, this isn't the order of La Salette. There are already orders of La Salette. This is the order of the Mother of God. So it's not just about one apparition. So I don't need every detail about La Salette. I mean, that's been done there. It isn't what this order is about. This order is much bigger. It's about all Mary's apparitions, about all her words, her general message to encourage us to know how to fight the dragon. And so, so I'm getting lost. Where was I? We were somehow, so I was there 3 weeks, and I'm still interested in trying to get that digital format for him, but I haven't found the right moment to approach him, because it's always difficult. But anyway, he was very, very prayerful. Everybody, we prayed the whole divine office, we prayed litanies, we had exposition of the Blessed Sacrament during the day, we had Mass, we had sometimes Mass twice a day, because he would go to different places and say Mass at the homes, and all the way when we were traveling, it was always the Rosary and the Divine Mercy Chaplet. There was lots and lots of prayer, all in French, and they said I could pronounce it marvelously. I don't know very many words what I was saying, but I have a great actress's pronunciation. And also they were going to teach me French, and that never was happening. And I'm thinking, I will never be able to form any candidates in France or French Africa. There were many African countries that's, you know, where French is still the major language. This just isn't happening. I kept thinking, but Mary brought me here. I knew she brought me here. There was some reason. And I definitely wanted the digital copy of those documents. But I was losing faith that I would get any guidance from this priest, and I was losing confidence that I was ever going to be able to found anything with him, because we just didn't have the same idea of what it meant to be the order, and I had lost confidence that he even knew from his thesis. I mean, he was more interested in God the Father. He really didn't understand what all this rule implied and what Mary was doing. So I was really, like, the three-week limit, you know, I had, by that time, the first week or two, I was excited because there was still hope. They were talking about Saint Aignan, and we were gradually getting things cleaned, and we got a car, and things were looking better from day to day. So I sent you a digital email, you know, the newsletter with pictures, and I was sincere. I thought things were going good, but things began going downhill. And so, but I just kept hanging on day by day. I just thought something was happening. Now, Father Courtville, he is the president of the La Salette Association that has been going since the early 1950s. His father was president for decades and a very renowned Father Fernand Courtville. And you have to understand that in France, the La Salette apparition is very, very sensitive and has been debated since 1873 acutely by scholars. It's a hot subject that thousands of articles and books and all sorts of things have been written on it, because on the day of the apparition, there was just one, it was clear, and there's no secret about it, that Melanie and Maximin had both received a secret. This is at Fatima that happened, and at Medjugorje, they said they have secrets there. So everybody knew they both had a secret, and that people weren't sure when it would be divulged or if it would be. But so within 5 years, it had gone to the Pope, they had sent things, and the bishop was a hero of the French Revolution, a very, very holy priest. He was very elderly. He was like in his late 80s, early 90s when this happened, and he believed the children. Actually, what's very interesting and something that that isn't known, it's not in books, and I found out this because I got to go to La Salette, and I got to interview a descendant of Maximin, and he still lives in that same little town of Cor, in the same house where Maximin lived and was born, and they run a little business there. And he said that the reason the town people believed immediately and never doubted the children was because when they came down from the mountain, these two children who had only met each other 2 days before, Maximin was filling in for a shepherd who was sick, and Maximin lived way far away at the other end of Cor, and Melanie and Maximin didn't know each other, so there was no way they could plot this thing. They had just met. So, but when they came down from the mountain after the apparition, they were talking to each other as far as they thought, you know, just regular, you know, whatever the day's event. But people could hear them, and they were talking in Latin. and the people knew this something's going on here that's way beyond these children. So the town people never doubted them, and I want to write this down somewhere because I've never seen any. The people who were with me there, they had read, they were French and knew La Salette for decades, and they said they had never heard that. That was never really made known. And people don't really interview the townspeople. It all gets political. But anyway, back to La Salette is a sensitive subject in France because of the secrets. Because everything was approved in bulk, you could say, by the bishop, who had also consulted Pope Pius IX. So it was... approved, and but Melanie was told to divulge her secret 12 years later, in 1858. And so she wanted to enter the sisters, join the sisters there that were close to La Salette, and they loved her and wanted her. But there were a lot of political reasons. I could go into a whole lot of political reasons why Melanie was sent away from the shrine. It was there was a lot of Freemasonry going on, and they didn't want to promote some people didn't even want to promote the shrine. So Melanie was attracting too much attention because everybody thought she was a saint, and they all wanted to talk to her. So it was thought that if she would get out of the area, then you know, devotion to the whole thing would calm down. So Melanie was sent to a Carmelite monastery in London, or Darlington, rather. And so she was out of the picture until 1858. And she was happy. She wanted to be a sister of any kind. She just wanted to pray because she knew that was the main thing that was needed in the world, with conversion of souls. But she made it clear to the community that she was not, she would take vows, but not for life, because she would have to promote the secret once it was time to release it. And it's not clear how clear anything was, because Melanie did not speak French. She spoke the local dialect. And so then when she was like basically forced into a convent, it was in England. So now the sisters there spoke some French, but mostly English. And Melanie knew only a little French. And so I'm sure the communication was very, very poor. And she really wasn't interested in, and they never made her a choir sister because she couldn't learn Latin or anything. They made her just a maid, the lay sister. And she was happy with that. She did a lot of penance, incredible penances when she was there. And but then in 1858, she said, "Now I have to go." And they said, "What? You're a Carmelite. You have to stay here forever till you're dead." And she said, "No, that wasn't my intention when I made the vow." So she couldn't make herself understood. So she wrote a note, tied it to a rock, and threw it over the enclosure wall. Someone picked it up and took it to the bishop. The bishop was there the next day and said, "She has to go. She has a mission." So I don't know if he gave her a dime or not, but she walked out, and then she started going back to France and started trying to get people to find people who would publish the secret, because she said it was time now. So when the secret was published, and around, it took a while. She came out in 1858. That's when ideally it was supposed to be published, but I don't think it really got out until she found a bishop in Italy who published it in the early 1870s. And then when that came out, it begins with, "And the priests are cesspools, and the religious, the convents are full of demons." And, you know, it's really a very, very strong message. And it's about the Catholic leaders in the world are not being faithful, and this is going to lead to many wars and many punishments. And it was very apocalyptic toward the end. It talks about the hail of wild animals, earthquakes. It's very symbolic language. It's very hard to really understand, you know, exactly what it meant. But when that hit France, and there were so many people who believed in Melanie and believed in La Salette, and then there were many clergy who did not like being called cesspools, and so it was a very, very volatile subject for years and years. And so there are whole books written on why Melanie is a liar and a fake and wanted just to get attention, and she's a rotten person, and Maximin is too, because he defended Melanie till he died. And so So in France, it's still a hot topic, but in the middle of the 1900s, it was for devout Catholics living in a France which was so secularized. It was kind of a rallying point for devout Catholics. And so this Association of La Salette was for people who wanted to support scholars and publications that defended the truth of the message in a very scholastic way, because France was full of scholars. And so so Fernand Courtville was a layperson, and he was very much into this. And so they published a newsletter, and now Fernand died when he was 100, almost 100. And then his son, Father Michel, is now the president. And he has all sorts of printing. There was a printing machine in every bedroom, every corner of that house, and in the garage. And I said, do you really use all these? Oh, no, that one's just for spare parts. That one is for this, and that one cuts, and this one binds. You know, it was just, it was quite a little production. So the newsletter's still going on, but the membership has gone down because the scholarship, it just isn't there. Father Michel isn't really serious about promoting La Salette as well, but he uses that base to collect funds, and he was very interested in, I found out later, I was meeting a lot of people in this association, so I didn't really know what I was doing. So, anyway, for the people who are on the mailing list, he enthusiastically told them, you know, that I am here to start finally the Order of La Salette, and it's going to begin, and if anybody wants to come and help or join or do anything to help, you know, you're welcome to come. So this woman from Brittany, which is northwest France, really just next to the English Channel. It's kind of a culture in itself because it was people who escaping, it was the Britons were running from the Saxons or something in the 500s. So they had their own kind of a Gaelic language, and it got killed finally in World War II because it was necessary to teach the boys how to speak French. So, but it's really got its own culture. So there was a woman there, kind of like, I'll call her a military aristocracy, you know, not like a descendant of the king, but very much a political family, and her father was very well known and published many books, and there was some money in that family somehow. She was very well educated and had been teaching French. After she raised her children, she went all over different countries like Saudi Arabia and Moscow, teaching French to the children of ruling families, because French, at least in the 80s and 90s, that was still considered the culture language of Europe. So that you wanted your children to know how to speak French if they were in the ruling families. So she's quite a personality, very, 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 very learned person. And so, but her family, her father had been devoted to La Salette, and she had too from her childhood. She named her first child Melanie Calvet. When she said the order was getting started, she was very excited. And by now she was in her early 70s. She and her husband are retired. They live on a country estate, which they call the chateau. So she asked her husband if she could just go and see what she could do to help, because of course. So she just showed up. She contacted Father Courtville ahead of time and said that, you know, she couldn't be a nun. She was still married, but she just wanted to know if there's anything she could do to help, you know, as it was getting started. And Father Courtville said, oh, yes, yes. And he had his 100-year-old mother to take care of, and he was always looking for people to help take care of her. So if she could come and, you know, just support us and do whatever. And so she showed up on my three-week line, and she was really my savior for the whole rest of the time, because she spoke English very, very well. And she was a very organized person. So the first thing she does is she wants to talk to everybody who's coming through and find out, you know, what's the plan here? What are we doing? How's this order going to get started? And what are we going to do in St. Agnon? And should I rent a separate apartment? Or am I supposed to live with these women or get somewhere else? And, you know, what's the plan? And so she was interviewing everybody and trying to figure this out. And when she heard my story, she said she knew in her heart that everything else around was pretty disorganized and she didn't think it would fly. But she said she knew I was called and she was here to help me, whatever. And so she announced to Father Courtville that I needed to learn French if I was ever going to learn to read all these documents. And so She would teach me French, and she wanted me to have 1 hour in the morning and 1 hour in the afternoon, and that was that. And she and Father Courtville was kind of like in awe of her because of her. And we don't really understand that, and I don't understand it now, because in America, we're all in the same class, right? But in France, they still have all sorts of different levels of class. And so someone in a little higher social position, that is, you know, very interesting and very, very special to people in a slightly lower class. So she had a lot of influence at the dinner table or wherever. And so we had one French lesson, one. And after that, all the other French lessons, we went off to a park somewhere, and we spent the whole time comparing notes, trying to figure out what was going on. So turns out he's a cult leader. This was one of his many sects. He's a professional leader of running sects and S-E-C-T-S. And so he solicits money. He gets attention. He gets invited to different places to give speeches. He has mailing lists, and it's very complicated. And so this is where I'm still on the learning curve, because the sects he was involved many private apparitions, and they have their websites and their publications. And some of these are known in America and get sold in Catholic bookstores here, and people think they're genuine because they have imprimaturs with them and names of bishops and photos with clergy, and it all looks very, very legitimate. But when you get there, you realize that a lot of these are all networked together, and the bishops' names and the imprimaturs are faked. And some of these bishops are real bishops, but they are in schism, and they're not in obedience to the church, and they're on their own doing what they want. And so this became very, very dark and very, very confusing. And it was important. And so at a certain point, we knew we had to get away from this priest. It was done. But that was with the help of this Father Jean-Claude, who came back to us after his retreat. I'm not sure what I should get into first. I want to give you a synopsis of the things this priest was into, but I'll do it briefly, I hope, and because that isn't the part of my talk. But
could you just mention when Father Jean-Claude was wanting to go to the bishop and how that surfaced?
Okay, we'll skip to that. Okay.
Yeah,
okay, let's skip all the rest, kind of.
Okay.
So.
Because that's where the big red flag was.
That's right. Okay. So I was there like about 5 weeks or so, and then Father Jean-Claude returned in August, early August. He finished his retreat, and so he came back, and he was all pumped up to go, and so he wanted to get this thing started. So he came back. He came to Beaupro, and. So he wanted Father Courtville to go with him to meet his bishop in the diocese where St. Aignan was, the bishop of Blois. And so Father Courtville was putting him off, and changing the subject. And so finally Father Jean-Claude realized he wasn't going to meet that bishop. There was something that he didn't want to meet that bishop for. So Father Jean-Claude told us later that the French hierarchy have a big website where the bishops talk to each other and share things, and all the priests of France have a password, so they can go in and read to see what the bishops are saying about things. So Father Jean-Claude went into that website and started looking up Father Michel Courtville, and found out that he was persona non grata with the French clergy. He did not have any bishop. He had been involved in so many schemes that he did not have permission anywhere to say Mass in France. So he just said Mass wherever he wanted, when he wanted, without permission. So all the Masses I attended were illicit. I hope they weren't invalid. We think he was ordained. There is some evidence that he was ordained in Rome, but he never got to go to a seminary in France because he had so many problems when he was in school, went through many schools, and was just always unsettled. And then the whole family had a reputation for mental illness, including Fernand. Also, they were brilliant. They were extremely brilliant. That kind of went with the mental illness thing. They were just phenomenally brilliant. And so I mean, Father Michel Courtville, he was there at dinner table constantly. We had people from Brazil speaking Portuguese, Spanish, Italian, French, English, and it was just a circle, a circus, and everybody was talking, and he was the translator, and he was just moving as fast as anything, and he never missed a beat, and you know, he really, really was amazingly brilliant. Even, I don't even think Pope John Paul could do it that fast, that quickly. And I found out later he was not only translating, but he was actually also mistranslating, because he, if he didn't want me to know something, he would translate it in a way that wasn't quite correct. And the person who said it didn't know it wasn't being translated correct, and I didn't know it wasn't. So, we found out once this Madame Pinot arrived, she started saying, oh, you're not getting the whole story here. I can see what's going on in France. So, but anyway, this Father Jean-Claude went on this and found out that Father Michel had no bishop and that he was known to be involved in different sects. And so it was just, so Father Jean-Claude went to each of us who were gathered in the house at different times and pulled us apart in the park somewhere quietly and told us the story and said that it was over. There would be no order starting with this priest. He couldn't do it, and that he, Father Jean-Claude, was only going to be a helper anyway because he's a parish priest. He had his own duties there, and he was very sorry, and but he wanted us to know ahead of time, and then he would face off with Father Courtville and tell him it was over and what a creep he was for leading us on down the garden path. So when we got away from him more, so we kind of had to, I was the most vulnerable in that group because he really, this priest, Father Courtville, really, really wanted me to use me as the big drawing card because I sincerely thought I was called to do this. So he wanted me to be the big drawing card for him to start this order, a nonprofit, collect donations, and do whatever he wanted. So he really wanted to persuade me to be on his side, to trust him and to believe him. And so I knew I would have a lot of trouble getting away from him in a good way. But we all needed to leave quickly because he was going to some conference in early August in Midwest France for one of his God the Father, it turned out, to give conferences there on these revelations that I believe are spurious. So so we all ended up, those of us who want, there were four of us who really wanted to leave. The others were kind of involved in the whole sect. Turned out that friend, that African woman, Father Courtville had been in, he had been ordained in Rome by a cardinal for Africa because he couldn't get anyone in France. So he was ordained back in 1985. And so he went to the seminary in Rome kind of for that reason. And so he did spend some time in Africa. And since then, off and on, he has helped illegal aliens come into Africa. And then they get, like, this woman that was in my pictures there. I thought she was going, you know, I was told she wanted to be in the order. She is receiving help and a friend from France on a scholarship loan to go to school, but she's not enrolled in any school. She's not attending classes. She's just giving the money that she receives to Father Courtville, who collects it. And like his father, they just collect and collect and collect. His father had received money from many estates of people who willed their entire estate to further the devotion to La Salette. And so we estimate he's worth several million euros, maybe 12, 15 million euros. But he lives like a miser. He lives he wears shabby clothes. He's always asking people for food or for help. We ate only expired food from a food pantry. And the house was in horrible condition. And he had been living there for a year beforehand with that African woman. They would just rather pray and have private revelations, and they think that African women has sometimes revelations, but I can imagine where they're from. They're not from the Lord. And so so they just let everything go to pot, and just it's just so crazy. So we found out later he's wanted by the police for helping illegal aliens and for having, he has property, we don't know how many properties he has across France because he's inherited these different estates for the associations. And then he rents them out to illegal aliens and collects money off of these. So he's involved in many nefarious schemes. But the more important thing is he's involved in many sects, different revelations. They kind of feed off of each other, and then they publish each other's books, and these prophets invite each other to their conferences, and then it gets international. And then one of them is very big, and even the French, many French bishops are deceived. So I don't know if I need to say anything about Father Courtville, except that it's kind of, that's basically what he's involved in, and a few other schemes as well. But anyway, it got to be quite a drama to get me out of there. So I had to. Those of us who wanted to leave decided we would all leave the same morning, different, and go in different ways. And then I would say that I was going to catch a train to Paris, and then take a flight to Kansas. But in reality, I would be going in the car with this Madame Pinault to Brittany, to their chateau, because her husband is also, even more so, he worked in London for many years, so his English is more perfect than hers. And so they would help me translate the rule, and they would help me translate the documents I needed. And before she left, she paid Father Courtville for a digital copy of his thesis. He would do anything for money. He wouldn't have given it to me, but he took a lot of euros for the digital. So I got the digital. So I got away with the goods, in a way, the thesis in the digital form. And eventually in Brittany, we translated the rule. So very dramatically, Father Jean-Claude said he would be taking a train the next day, and so on a certain day, and then Madame Pinault had her husband Noel call Father and say that, well, if she's not going to Saint-Aignan, I need her back here, and there's no reason for her to stay any longer, and I won't let her stay. So Father Courtville couldn't keep this woman any longer against her husband's will, and so it was only to get me out. And so so the last couple of days before the finish line, I began having serious doubts about whether I could ever start this order, because I was too old to learn French, and everything we did came to nothing. I've been trying for several years, it was all a failure, so I would be crying and having these attacks. And then now we're not going to Saint-Aignan and stuff. And he would kneel down beside me and beg me, saying that he was a doctor of the church because he has a doctorate, and I should trust him, and that I did have those revelations, and I should become the Mother Superior, and I shouldn't leave France, I should stay with him. And so the pressure was on pretty high. And by the way, he did not do that doctorate. That was not his thesis. He paid another priest to do that thesis for him so that he could get known as a doctor and publish it like that. The other priests got all the money from the sale of the books, and they were significant because La Salette, when those Vatican documents were discovered, it was a big sensation in France back in 2001 or so. So there was a lucrative thing. So that priest got money and fame for the work, but Father Courtville got all the fame. So then he could tell his associations that he was a doctor now, but there was no thesis. I mean, there was nobody to assign him a doctor. And he didn't do the work anyway. But the work is excellently done. That priest was a scholar of significant, he was, it's truly a very, very valuable three-volume work. So it is what I need for the foundation stone. And so we have it. So, is this still recording? Just a minute. Yes, I think. There's hope, I think. So finally, I told him that I had to consult my Carmelite prioress and had to call her and Skype with my director and see if they feel that they would accept me back in Carmel. It was kind of, I had to play the game with him too. We were not all on the up and up, but it was very, very touch and go to get out of there in a way that wouldn't be, I could get out. So in the interim, I said that, I have to go. And so he was very upset, and the black girl that was there, the African, she cried and cried. She said, I wanted to start the order, now you're going. But she had told this other Madame Pinault that she would never be a nun, and she didn't want anything to do with it. And so they were all playing games, and we were playing games, so it was really something. So at the last minute, Madame Pinault said she could give me a ride to the train station because she was on her way to Brittany. So Madame Pinault and I drove off together, and Father Michel gave us his blessing, and the African sister was crying. So that was the end of Beaupro for me. So Brittany was paradise. And there I settled down. This couple had bought property with the ruins of four houses, and they build up two into garages and things because they have a lot of property. They planted orchards and potatoes and everything, and so and it's on the Atlantic. It's like an inlet from the Atlantic. So it's gorgeous weather. It never gets below freezing, and in the summer it really never gets above 75. It was just it was really nice, and they have fog sometimes, but never real bad fog. So I don't know. It's just quite a place to live. And so they originally lived in one house that was smaller. And while this woman was all over the royal families, kind of, and she gradually earned enough money to rebuild this magnificent chateau, which is very beautiful. So now they live in the chateau, and the smaller house is now a guest house. So they set me up in the guest house and said I would be their guest for as long as it took to translate things. And actually, they wanted me to stay longer because there's more things in France that can be translated. There's more books, and they were excited, and they were going to do that. Now a part, I really have to ad-lib this, but it's important. How do I say it? Okay, so just get over the translating. So we were there for a week or so solid, and then they worked every day on the rule. The rule itself, the text on the internet, the French text, doesn't match well. I mean, there are many errors. It's not major, but it's very sloppy. And so it doesn't match well the many printed editions that exist in France. And there is one of Melanie's own handwriting. So first of all, we got that French text of the internet corrected. And then, to start on the English translation. And the English translation, there were many strange clauses I never could figure out. But the French text, Mary spoke in very plain French. It wasn't poetic or theological or symbolic. The rule itself is not symbolic. It's very simple and clear. And so we got that into a very gorgeous English text that just breaks my heart. It's just beautiful. It's just so beautiful. And so after that, when I saw the rule, I said, I don't need an expert on La Salette to understand this rule. This rule is clear. I've got it. It's done. And so but the couple said, you need to go to La Salette before you go back to America. So he had a camper, and so we went in his camper, and we spent 8 days going through France, because it was the other absolute opposite end of France. And then at the hotel at night, I stayed with the women, us two ladies stayed in the hotel room, and it was just a magnificent, magnificent pilgrimage for me. We spent like 3 days at La Salette itself, and it was just incredible graces. So that was the journey of a lifetime. But then when we came back, and it was always a problem, and I have to be vague because I don't know it all, because so much is in French. And this Madame Pinault knows much more. But there is a prophetess that lives less than a mile from the chateau. So she's very local, very well known. And when she began having her revelations, it was like, sometimes it would be in the parish church or wherever, and it was clear. I mean, she'd be talking, then, you know, and then she'd be completely absorbed, and then she'd be getting something. And so no one thought she was faking it. But in some ways, this woman began, then she started having a prayer group and more things around her there locally. But she also began breaking up marriages in some ways by telling people that your wife is no good, or your husband is no good, and you shouldn't trust them. So there was some really evil fruits locally about this. But some people thought, you know, that's the truth, you know. But it was really, so Madame Pinault began really suspicious about this woman. You know, was this really it? So she began doing a lot of research on this herself, and she found out that this woman is running multiple websites. In South America, she is Sister so-and-so, and she has revelations there in Spanish. In Ireland, she was Maria Divine Mercy. Remember that one? And her website was English, but she was a married woman of some kind. And then in another country, she is a married man, and it's a different language and different revelations. So, and then she herself, Marie Divine, her name in France is Marie Pierre. She has a whole big Chemin de Vie way of life thing, big movement. She publishes millions of books and travels, but whenever she speaks in public, it's behind a veil. She, out of humility, she doesn't want to be seen. And that's very convenient because when she appears as Marie Divine Mercy or something, she's also behind a veil. You never see these people. You never get a picture of them except the local people who know them. And so, but what is her message? If it's really demonic, and there's good evidence that it is, what is the message? It's going to be her duty and these other false prophets. That will be their duty to expose false prophets. And they're already persecuting prophets who are good. So this is going to, this, and unfortunately, she has much respect among the French bishops. The French bishops, there must be somewhere up to 100 of them. It's an old church, so there's like a bishop in every other town, you know, like the medieval times. So there's a lot of bishops. So she has a lot of influence there. And Madame Pinault, and so turned out she was the one who had put up the rule of the Mother of God that I found on the internet, an anonymous website. And it was a shoddy French version and a strange translation of English, and I don't know what the other languages are like, how bad they are, because she feels called to begin the Order of the Last Times and the Order of the Mother of God. And so when she found out, I was at the chateau. Father Corfield had some kind of connection with her. And so, and he still wants to found the Order of the Mother of God, and so does she. And so, and were they working together or separately? I was never clear because you never know what's going on completely. But it became clear that suddenly we were being watched on the road and our times were moved. And so, when I was gone one day at Mass, the whole little house where I lived, it was broken into and things were gone through looking for things. And so, it was very important to them to discredit me and make me look like a villain or a thief or whatever. So so they wanted to discredit me so that no one would think that I was going to start this order somewhere and become my website and become an entity somewhere. So they were very anxious to discredit me. And so I was working with the local court, whatever, that works with the Paris embassy, because that this couple wanted to sponsor me for a year, pay my health insurance, and to let me stay there for a year so I could, you know, work with them and get more things translated with them. Because it helps when someone is there who asks questions like the text, you know, we're translating this into English, do you understand this English? Well, not really, it could be a little slower, you know. So it helped, you know, when I was there. And so they were all excited to do that. And so we were working to get those papers through when we got a call from a local priest who said, get the American out on the next plane because there's going to be trouble tomorrow. And it was the day before. It was Friday afternoon, and it was just a regular Friday afternoon. We weren't planning on, you know, we weren't planning on going anywhere. And the next morning was Saturday, a weekend, and also it was Labor Day weekend. And so Madame says to her husband, you know, get on. This is heartbreaking, but we have to get her out. We'll bring her back later when things settle down, but she better get out now. And her husband says, impossible, absolutely impossible. You know, this is a weekend. We just can't do it, you know, this fast. It's not going to happen. And this woman is so holy and so full of faith. She goes, if Mary wants it to happen, it will happen. Now get on the phone and start working on it. So within an hour and a half, he had three different flights laid up for me to get out of Brittany to Paris, Paris to Dallas, and Dallas to Wichita. And so at 4 a.m. the next morning, I was in their van in the dark where nobody was seeing us on the road, and I was out of town before anything happened the next day. And I'm not sure what happened the next day because we agreed at that time our telephone was being tapped and our internet was also done. And we had set up a private internet account between the two of us that we could use. And once I got back to America, it was completely hacked from within. And they were sending messages with my password out to everybody on my contact list, which fortunately was a very small website, email, because it was new. I was just using it in France. And so they sent in broken English to everybody I knew that I was a fake, and I was a beggar, and I should be back in Carmel, and I shouldn't be accepting money from anybody, and I was bad, and blah, 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 blah. It sent it to everybody I knew, and they just thought, who, what? You know, they just didn't believe it. But so they're very anxious about what I'm doing. So we are in a battle mode. So I told all this to Father Bernie. He's heard this story twice now. And so he helped me draft a letter to Bishop Kemi. And I had it very long. And Father Bernie says shorter. And I showed him it shorter. And then I was had it. And Father Bernie says shorter, 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 shorter. So we got to one page. And it's just the bare facts that I got the rule and the text. And so we wait to see if Bishop Kemi is willing to sponsor, and you know, it's one thing to invite someone like a Dominican conference, like the Nashville Dominicans, to come here and run a congregation, you know, work in a parish or something. That can be done. You know, that's not a big hassle for a bishop. But for a bishop to sponsor a fledgling order, that will mean approving constitutions and going to Rome and different things. It's a lot of steps, and he's a very busy bishop. So I don't know if he will be the one. I pray, I hope it is, because I love Wichita and there's so many good vocations here. So, but anyway, if you're a friend of me, you're going to be in somehow in combat, because this is Mary's time. And so it is going to be under attack in many ways. But it also tells us that, you know, if Satan's upset, that's a good sign, because it means something good is going on that he wants to destroy. So I think this is all that I have to share.
You're doing that.
Yes.
Thank you.